Welcome back to the 750. I am your ORG Ochoa. He is your 75, Mr. Two-time Super Bowl champion, College Football Hall of Famer, the one, the only, the man himself, Tony Casillas. Tony, happy New Year's Eve to you, my friend.
You too, brother. I cannot believe we're closing the 2018 year out, and it's going to be 2019 tomorrow. And I was just thinking about this. I still have one more day to work on my New Year's resolution for 2018.
What's your resolution going to be?
Well, I'm talking about 2018.
Oh, so what was your resolution?
I told someone that today. They just looked at it and like, that's kind of funny. I don't really do resolutions because I think you kind of set yourself up for failure. Yeah. I want to minimize my bad habits
and get better
at some things and set some goals. But it's really hard to set a New Year's resolution and sticking to it.
I'll ask you this on the subject of New Year's resolutions. You're a gym rat. I mean, you're at the gym all the time. How much do you hate New Year's? Because there is such an influx of people that's their resolution. So I got to imagine, you know, for somebody who's there all the time, you know, and I know that's not me, somebody that's there all the time,
Maybe that should be New Year's resolution.
Yeah, but then I'd be the guy I'm talking about. So how annoying are the first 2 weeks of January?
It's really crowded. It's pretty miserable. As you mentioned, I make it a way of life, and you see the influx. You see a lot of people that are in there, and you got to give people credit. They're trying to get in shape and do the things that they didn't do the year before. But what I like to watch, and since I go there so many, I've been there going to the same gym for so many years and know the people, is to see all the different new faces.
Right.
And then after about, I would say, about a month, then you start seeing all those people just kind of phase out.
Wow.
But it is one of those things that you just kind of, you got to pick your time to go. And, when I go, it's really not that busy. But yeah, it's definitely an influx. It's really great for personal trainers and gyms this time of the year.
This is their Black Friday.
Oh, absolutely.
So how long does it take you to stop writing 18 on you? You know, you write a letter, you fill something out. You know what I mean? How long does it take you to get used to writing the new year? Because I think it takes like 6 weeks.
You know what? I've been around for a long time, and I've tried to do a lot of, you know, change things and resolution, but I try to extend it for, I really try to hit it hard, whatever that may be my goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to stick with it. I know five years ago, I had a bet, and it wasn't really a resolution. It was a bet because we were all fat asses and we wanted to lose weight. So I made a resolution, but it was a bet. You know, I'm just keeping it real on the 750.
Of course.
So I had a bet with a friend of mine, so that kind of motivated me, and I needed to lose about, I think my goal was, you know, percentage was, you know, we keep everything in perspective, but mine ultimately was to lose 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole bet and the whole this resolution was who could do it the fastest by March. Well, RJ, I got on a diet, and I figured out, you know, if you diet and you work out, you got a pretty good chance of success, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing, you know, how that works.
It's a hard thing to figure out.
Yeah. So anyway, I ended up extending, went to March, and I lost all this weight, and I just stayed on it. And I think, you know, that was 5 years ago, and I still have pictures. You know, I'm back up to about 260 now. I got down all, I took it all the way down to 235, and I look sick. But I never got paid for the bet.
Oh,
and nevertheless,
man,
it motivated me to lose weight and change my life. And that's what I recommend to you or anyone else and any of our listeners. Hey, look, just make a resolution. Bet something.
Yeah.
It's amazing how that motivates you.
Even if you don't ever get paid, like Tony. You know what I mean?
you can't welch on your bet.
That's a good point.
Especially if a dude, you know, is you know, getting it done. I mean, you know, mine was dinner. It saved us money. It saved the money because I wasn't eating as much. I wasn't eating as much as the 300-pound man I used to be. So, but nevertheless, as I said, it really motivated me, and you know, that's kind of what I try to do every year.
So you mentioned all the trainers that are looking forward to this time of year, certainly. And I said it was like Black Friday.
How they're all real nice, and you know, they haven't talked to you in a year.
Oh yeah, now they got all these specials.
Happy New Year. Pretty transparent.
Well, it's like their Black Friday, like in retail. You know, it's like their Black Friday, but you and I are speaking on Black Monday in the NFL,
Black Monday.
The day after Week 17,
Taps music is playing right now.
Exactly. As of the time that we are recording this, there are currently 8 NFL head coaching vacancies. Obviously, we knew that the Green Bay Packers and Cleveland Browns had moved on from their coaches. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers fired Dirk Cutter. The New York Jets fired Todd Bowles. The Cincinnati Bengals finally purged themselves of Marvin Lewis. The Denver Broncos moved on from Vance Joseph. The Miami Dolphins, shockingly, moving on from Adam Gase, and the Arizona Cardinals move on from Steve Wilks. The Cowboys, Tony, will play 3 of these teams in 2019. They will play the Packers, the Dolphins, and the, goodness gracious, the Jets. So, you know, Jason Garrett's record against first-year head coaches kind of, you know, goes back and forth. But it will be interesting, I think, to see who ends up with Aaron Rodgers, who ends up with Sam Darnold and the Jets, who ends up, obviously, with Josh Rosen. You know, you look at what the Bears have going on, a coach can change a franchise.
Yeah, and if Greg Williams goes back to Cleveland and
no doubt.
They bring a coach in for Baker Mayfield, well, by the way, congrats. That was amazing. You know, surpassed the rookie record for touchdown passes in a single season. I got to give some props to my OU guy. But it was amazing. I hate hoping someone gets fired, or we talk about coaches getting fired. The reality is on Monday, it's, as you mentioned, 8 guys looking for jobs and already looking ahead to next year, the teams that the Cowboys will play with first-year coaches. So it's the nature of the beast, and I really – coaches aren't getting as much time as they used to get.
No way.
Some of the names you just mentioned, we're talking about two-year guys in the league.
Steve Wilks, first year.
Right. So, but I think it's everything is relevant. It's all about what type of season, how did you lose?
Sure.
I mean, what happened, you know, the developmental and everything, but these owners aren't afraid to move on.
You mentioned your OU guy, Baker Mayfield. Obviously the Browns, I think everybody's really excited about. They'll be a really hip playoff pick for the 2019 season. His last play though of 2018, you know, he had a chance to help the Pittsburgh Steelers get into the playoffs. He threw an interception to C.J. Mosley. Kind of fitting, Tony, and I don't mean this as harsh as it sounds, that an OU player would get picked off by an Alabama one.
Oh, gosh.
That was just kind of the weekend that
you were
was.
Waiting for that, though. You just wanted to wait for the right time on the podcast to mention that. But I didn't even think about that. Look,
you set me up. I couldn't.
Yeah,
take
I know.
A shot,
that's a good way we set each other up. I mean, that was a snowball. That was a softball for you. But going back to Baker Mayfield and as a rookie and some of the things these guys. Now, I think it's really important in the National Football League is to find someone that is compatible with their quarterback.
Sure.
And I don't know if Greg Williams will be there, but you know, all these other coaches, again, there's not much patience with owners. And I think that it's really magnified now because they're looking to see, you know, if you have some pretty good players in place and you bring a coach in and all of a sudden, you know, things go south, you don't want to regress. And I think a lot of these coaches, they either have the knack for head coaching jobs or they don't. And I think that that's the judgment that they come fall under.
It's so interesting the way that works. Because like you said, they either have it or they don't. So many things are – it's not like you can't go to college to become a coach. I mean, you know, you could, obviously. I mean, what I mean is there are things you can't learn. There are things you can't be taught. There are just things that, you know, there's
– the nuances of communication and being able to – you know, relate to different guys. I mean, again, it's almost like the Midas touch. You either have it or you don't.
Exactly. It's personality. It's just, it's a funny thing the way sports and ultimately life work, and an interesting thing to talk about, a great point of reflection on New Year's Eve, obviously. But on the subject of like guts and feel and intangibles, you know, we haven't even mentioned, which is the reason we're here, the Dallas Cowboys won on Sunday. They beat the New York Giants 36-35. They are 10-6. That is their final regular season record. They are headed to the playoffs. They will host the Seattle Seahawks on Saturday night on Fox, not on NBC, so that'd be really weird. Tony, I will tell you that the last time the Cowboys lost in the wild card round was against the Seahawks, and that game took place on a Saturday night as well, although it was up in the Pacific Northwest, not at AT&T Stadium where this game will be played. So lots of ghosts to exercise, if you will. But the Cowboys won in New York in dramatic fashion, and I think kind of off of some gut, some feel, some Midas touch, if you want to call it that. I made it no secret throughout the game on Twitter, I was not a fan of how Jason Garrett and the Cowboys sort of played this thing. here's what I think. I wrote about this, and this was the analogy I used. The Cowboys were sitting on 19. They were playing a game of blackjack sitting on 19. And most people, you know, you there, you know, you go to Windstar, you go to Cashada, you go to Vegas, you're sitting on 19, and
you hold.
And you're holding, right? I mean, that's what everybody would do. And they hit, and you know what? A deuce came out, and good for them, man. I mean, good for them. But I think it must be acknowledged that while they certainly look right with the benefit of hindsight, they took an extreme risk in New York, and maybe it'll pay off. I mean, it was – what are your thoughts?
Well, I think first of all, it was a meaningless game. It was boring. It's kind of everything we talked about. You know, New York Giants, you know, they were had one foot in the door, one foot out the door, getting ready for the offseason. The Cowboys are looking, you know, on down the road the next week to playoffs. So it was just a very boring game. Mm-hmm. And I say that to be very sarcastic.
Obviously.
I mean,
obviously.
It was one of the most exciting games I've seen this year for a game that really meant nothing. But really meant something, because I think the Giants, you got to give Pat Shurmur a lot of credit for getting his team ready to play. Because I think that you kind of saw, and they talked about during the broadcast, you know, guys are out there trying to beat the Cowboys. I mean, it meant something to play. Now, if it would have been another team outside the NFC East, maybe it would have been different. But guys were playing, you know, for the jobs, for the coach. But then the flip side of that with the Cowboys, you know, I thought it was one of Dak Prescott's better games of his career.
It was incredible.
And just the way he was playing, you know, Cole Beasley, you know, I think all the world, welcome to the NFL world, Blake Jarwin, because everyone knows who he is now. I mean, he was obscure before going the game, and then Cole Beasley. But just don't tell me that game didn't mean anything to the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, yeah, I was probably thinking the same thing. And why is Dak Prescott out there? Why is some of the, you know, he'd have two of the starters weren't playing. Defensively, you know, when Leighton Vander Esch went down, I think everybody was holding their breath. But it meant something. And I think for that big reason, going into playoffs momentum, I think they will get a lot out of this game. And I think especially the way Dak Prescott played was pretty remarkable.
Well, absolutely. But, I mean, I think that's a product of going for it. You know what I mean? They went for it. I mean, you know, and I don't mean in a literal sense. They did go for, obviously, that two-point conversion. But, I mean, they went for it.
Well, they had
it.
To. They weren't going to try to play for the – yeah.
Right,
so
right. But what I mean is that they went for it. You know, there's a lot of ways you can handle a game like this. You can bench everybody. You can play everybody. You can pull guys at a certain point. And the Cowboys kind of did everything. You know, they didn't play Zeke Tyron or Zach Martin. That's that, you know, school of thought. They pulled some guys after some action. Certainly got a little bit of a scare, like you mentioned, with Leighton Vander Esch. Thank goodness he's all right. He said it was just a bruise. But, you know, that's something certainly that doesn't tickle. And then they left Dak in the entire game. They left Amari in. They left Cole Beasley in. I mean, they, you know, they're different schools of thought. And I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way to handle it. I do think it's a lot of feel. And I think especially after Leighton Vander Esch goes down, at that point, that would have spooked me personally. I was okay. You know what? I'm good. I saw everything I needed to see. There were a lot.
Yeah, I'm holding on that 19. I'm not taking another card.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and the Cowboys hit. They walked away. They doubled up. They walked away from that table richer than they were when they sat down. But the risk still existed, and I think that's the important part. And I think the important part within that is that the Cowboys are now willing to take a risk, because I agree with you. I mean, if momentum is a real thing, which is a whole different debate, there's no question that the Cowboys have it now, but they had to, you know, they had to toe the line to get it, you know, and however, you know, deeply you believe they towed it or not, they still did. I mean, every moment that Dak Prescott was out there was dangling yourself above a piranha pit, you know what I mean, and they walked away unscathed, and good for them, but it was just a huge risk, and I'm really, more than I disagree with it, I'm surprised that Jason Garrett employed that strategy.
Yeah, because I think hindsight's 20/20. If something would have happened to Dak Prescott, if someone would have got injured, like, well, we told you so. But, you know, I really think with Dak, and I think we saw in that game especially, his ability to move in the pocket and scramble and some of the throws he made. I mean, we're on target. You know, guys extending plays. And I think whenever your quarterback, you're leaving your quarterback in that long, it's all about, hey, look, you know, we had conversations. What do you want to do, Dak? Do you feel better about sitting down, or do you want to keep in rhythm going into the playoff game? Because I think some players react differently. And maybe it was just kind of like the kind of a fill it out and see where we're at. But man, when it started getting into a dogfight, and all of a sudden that 10-6 record looked a lot better at beating the Giants at home, and the way he was playing, and collectively what they were doing, I think that they realized, okay, we're just going to let this play out. And again, it played out great for them because the way they won it, I think again, and as a player, former player, you have to have the confidence and momentum going into a game like that. I mean, some guys, as I mentioned, some guys react differently. Some guys need rest. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence, I mean, you really don't need to see him. But I think your quarterback and just the wide receivers. We would have never seen the Blake Jarwin catching three touchdown passes. We wouldn't have seen, you know, the Cole Beasley having, seven receptions in the game and playing out of his mind. Michael Gallup, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, we saw a glimpse of what Dak Prescott can do when he's under pressure. And some of the throws he made, RJ, throwing across his body, you know, a lot of guys can't do that. That was pretty amazing.
Again, I mean, it is, if you had asked either one of us, you know, ask 750, ask Jason Garrett, whoever, before this game happened, if you had said, you know, if you could have exactly what you want have happen, if you could design the results of this game, what would you want? I think they would have literally said exactly what happened. They would have said, oh, a battle, a hard-fought battle, back and forth, and, you know, somebody emerges, Dak is on fire, a game-winning drive. I mean, it had it all. I mean, it had, again, if you believe in momentum, this was the quintessential way to obtain it. And I agree with you. I think this was maybe Dak's finest hour. It looked, you know, it should be mentioned that his finest hour perhaps came with no Zeke, no Tyron, no Zach Martin, no Travis Frederick. Remarkable. I mean, it's...
I can't say how I just kind of felt uncomfortable seeing all those guys not suited up. You know, you had Zeke, you had Zach Martin, you had Tyron Smith. I mean, Travis Frederick, you know, he's gone.
Right.
But just seeing those guys over on the sideline, and I'm thinking, they're going to beat the Giants today? And I think everyone thought, well, maybe they could beat the Giants because, you know, the Giants are 5-10. So I think the biggest question is, what were they going to do in this game?
Right.
And I think that just became more of, okay, let's get a look with some of our guys because, you know, we're going to be playing Seattle at the time. They really didn't know, but I think everyone was betting on, assuming that they were going to play Seattle. So let's kind of see this thing all perpetuate. And I think again, you got a hot hand, you got those, you double down or you split those, you know, split those 10, an ace, not split an ace, but, you know, split, whatever your cards are in blackjack and like, okay, well, we're going to split those and we're going to double down and, hopefully, we're going to continue this on into playoffs.
I want to talk about Dak specifically, and I want to go back to what your old teammate, your guy Woody, said. And not to bring up the Romo part of it, but Woody, in his Romo comments that we talked about last week, he talked about how the Cowboys and everybody, the training staff, weight staff, whatever, believes in Dak and that he has that it factor. That was Woody's exact phrasing. And I think that was on display. I mean, I think that Dak does have that. I'm not... You know, we're not taking this in a Romo direction. Talking specifically about Dak Prescott, there is something that dude has, you know, that I don't think is measurable or tangible. He just has a gear in him that, you know, when the moment's hot, he is cool. And you know, he had the most touchdowns he ever thrown in a game, threw four touchdowns. You know, the throw that he had to Cole Beasley was maybe the greatest throw of Dak Prescott.
Oh, that was a tremendous throw.
I mean, the rollout, I mean, it was absurd. And, I mean, this game reminded me a lot of, and I was thinking about this throughout the game, now, amazingly, 11 years ago, when the Giants had already clinched their wild card spot going into the playoffs, and their regular season finale was against the New England Patriots, who were 15-0. Yep. And the Patriots already had the one seed, everything. They were playing, obviously, for the perfect season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Giants played. And so did the Patriots. But, you know, the Patriots are going for history. You could argue they at least had a motive. The Giants played them tough, and they lost that game. I really had a lot of respect for Tom Coughlin that day and that night. You know, for trying to preserve NFL history, which obviously they would go on to do in the game of all games. But I think a lot of people said, you know, throughout the playoff stretch that year, you know, that game gave the Giants a lot of confidence. And, you know, even though it was meaningless and, you know, whatever, the way they played and the fact that they hung with the Patriots, et cetera, you know, really rejuvenated them heading into the playoffs. They obviously beat the Cowboys themselves. But not that the Cowboys will see the Giants in the playoffs, but I have to believe that if you can acquire momentum, that was the laboratory to build it in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the point well taken. And I just know that you can look at it this way. Look at how many, and we just mentioned, you know, no Zeke, no Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, and DeMarcus Lawrence played, you know, what, the first half, or maybe the quarter. I didn't really keep a pitch count on him, but, you know, he wasn't out there as much. Mm-hmm. But you kind of think, you kind of look at it this way, and I think you do, it's human nature. Is, you know, guys, look what we did without everyone on deck, you know, on board. And I think that you kind of look at it that way. But I think the most part, and I think the best point about this whole thing with Dak Prescott, and I disagreed with what Woody said, but now when you start looking at the big picture about everyone that's around him, starting with the training staff, with, we're not just talking about his teammates, and seeing his work ethic and how passionate he is, I think that's very infectious. And I think that, you know, you see that. And again, just the way he's kind of willing his way. And I said this earlier when we're talking about Dak, when they're going through that really, you know, that kind of spiraling down when they're 3-5 and mm-hmm. people are second guessing, is that, you know, he's pretty resilient. He lets the stuff like roll off his back. He'll come back at you. He may make a bad throw. I mean, what quarterback doesn't in the National Football League?
Right.
But he'll come back and hit those two or three plays. It'll give him an opportunity to win. And he just kept grinding and grinding. And I think a good grind is great, because you're going to be grinding a lot in the playoffs. And it's going to, as I said last week, the elevation of energy, everything that goes along with the playoff games is going to be elevated. And I got to tell you this. This may sound, it felt like they were playing a playoff game in a meaningless game, which to me was even more impressive.
It was, you know,
had that type of energy. It felt like there was, like, God, what are these guys? The Giants are going to be, they're 5-10, and the Cowboys already clinched the East and are playing Seattle in 2 weeks and in another week. I'm not seeing, this is not what I anticipated.
No, it was.
Is this what I'm seeing that I'm watching?
You know,
this is a hell of a game.
Mike Fisher from 105.3 The Fan was tweeting throughout this, "Fish is great," and, you know, had some sarcastic comments as well. You know, Twitter was ablaze during this game, and and Fish was kind of being coy and saying, "Well, yeah. You know, well, should the Cowboys go to overtime so they can get more opportunity to get, you know, to get momentum, more repetitions and things like that?" And, you know,
that's crazy.
And so when the Giants took the lead late, it did kind of have this, you know, this lurking feel of, oh no, if they just played their asses off to lose, you know, to you, as you mentioned, a 5-10 team the week before the playoffs, you know, if you're a believer in momentum, you know, you have to maybe think, well, maybe that sucks the life out of them. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, the whole thing went as perfectly as it could have gone. I agree with you. It did have a really competitive feel. And that's why you had a great point. I mean, all the credit in the world to Pat Shermer and Eli and the Giants. I mean, they hung in there.
They were the
first team to hang 30 points on the Cowboys defense this season. Dallas had gone all season long without, you know, letting that break. You know, who would have thought Eli Manning and that mighty arm of his would have been the one to do it. But, you know, you said it earlier, hindsight is 20/20. The hindsight here is fantastic. The hindsight is the Cowboys are right. They you know, they did the right thing. They did the right thing, but that's only true because of the result. If Leighton Vander Esch had been hurt, it would have been the stupidest thing they could have done. If Dak Prescott would have gotten hurt, it would have been the worst decision that Jason Garrett's ever made. The guy hit on 19 and he got a deuce. I mean, it's almost impossible, but he did it. It's amazing. And so, you know, if you're on this team, put yourself in those shoes, you know, the 2018 team. You've got the hardware, so you're already good. If you're Antoine Woods, who might switch to cornerback in the offseason after that, you know, it wasn't an interception.
It's a great pick. Great interception by the big fella. I like that kid.
He's so great. Yeah, you're Antoine Woods, if you're, you know, Daniel Ross, I mean, whoever you are, I mean, do you not feel
invincible? Bousier, that was a tremendous interception.
I mean,
that was
incredible. But if you're one of these guys, if you're one of the Cowboys right now, I feel like you got to feel invincible. I mean, you got to feel like, we could do anything. I mean, that's what a game like this, I think, does. I mean, you tell me if I'm wrong.
And that's part of it. That's part of the whole process, because I think the more you get into it, the more the challenge is there. You're on the road, and I think, you start, it got a little chippy in that game. They didn't shut it down. I mean, these guys play to win. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a characteristic that we haven't seen maybe in this locker room, is these guys are out there playing to win. It means something to them. You know, you can't tell a professional athlete, like, you're going to go out there and we're just going to tank and we're going to worry about it. You don't, that's maybe some guys, that's in their DNA. Mm-hmm. But I think collectively with this bunch is that you have a lot of guys that play with passion out there, that it really cares, and they're talented. They're well coached. And so that starts to come out. And that, to me, I don't care if you're, I guess if you're 11-5 or 13-3, it's a little irrelevant, because you're not, you have a different perspective, because you probably were a better team that year, maybe. But still, the postseason is totally different. But I think the momentum and just being able to do it, see it, touch it, and feel it. And when you're down, it's like, dude, wait, we're going to win. Don't worry about that. We're going to win this game. And that's exactly what happened. And that's the confidence that people don't understand, that you have to have, that a lot of teams don't have. And that's the reason why they don't go on and win the big games and don't make the big plays. And that's the thing that I like about this team, RJ, is that they have a knack for making a play when maybe a year or 2 years ago you thought, well, we know how this is going to end.
Right.
Exactly the way they're not going to do it. They're going to end up not making a play, and something's going to happen where it prevents them from winning the game.
Let me say this. I'm not at all comparing these two things, and I'm not telling you, Tony. I'm telling everyone who's listening, because, I realize I'm approaching some legendary status here. I'm not comparing what Dak and the Cowboys did yesterday to this. But I want to ask you, because you're somebody who lived this. This game, from an energy injection standpoint, And you said earlier, you said different guys need different things. DeMarcus Lawrence, maybe he needs some rest. Dak Prescott, yep, maybe he needs to go out and ball out and mm-hmm. whatever. And I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, that applies to teams. Teams need different things. Some teams need a bye. Some teams, they need that, wake up, whatever you want to call it.
And the Cowboys are a young team.
Right.
One of the youngest teams in the National Football League.
And so I don't want to say that an energy standpoint, from a what they needed standpoint, this kind of reminds me, and again, I want to hear what you think of the 93 Week 17 game, coincidentally, in New York against the Giants. You guys really needed a bye, and you needed that really badly going into the playoffs, and that was the great Emmitt Smith,
the shoulder injury.
Shoulder injury, yeah. Game, and he gutted it out for
Eddie
you guys.
Murray,
yeah, exactly.
Kicking the field goal at the end.
It was incredible. But, yeah. It was a different team, different circumstances. But you guys needed that bye. And Emmitt was the hero that day, that really kind of, worked things along offensively to make sure you guys got what you needed. It helped you win the Super Bowl. The Cowboys yesterday on Sunday, maybe they didn't need a bye. They had an opportunity to take the game as a bye, but maybe that's not what Jason Garrett thought they needed. And in a similar way, again, I'm not comparing the two, but Dak's performance, I think, is the Emmitt of this game. Does that make sense? I mean, not putting Dak in that territory, but you know what I mean.
But it's the football anatomy, and I think that you look at this team is going to go back, and I think that that's why they're so close. And I think that there's this vibe in that locker room that you hear about, and it just seems like they're just a close group of dudes. And I think you got to have that. But going back to early on the season, we're 3-5, everybody wrote them off, and I look where they at now, and they're like, look, let's win 10 games. Anybody ever thought, did everybody think the whole world that we'd win 10, be 10-6 and win the NFC East? No. So to them, it's like, hey, we're invincible. Hey, we're immune to all the adversity and everything, because we're out there and we're able to overcome it by what we do on the field. And, that to me, obviously 1993 was a little bit, it was more at stake.
Yeah.
But still, it's everything's relevant to what type of team and what type of players you have, and especially your quarterback. And to think that your quarterback, and they mentioned this during the broadcast, that he told Jason Garrett, hey, I'm going to play the whole game. What's that say about Dak Prescott as an individual, as a person, and the respect that Jason Garrett has for Dak Prescott?
So take me into the locker room, as a defensive player. You know, you've spoken many times about your guy Troy. I mean, you mentioned your Oklahoma quarterback and Baker Mayfield, but your real Oklahoma quarterback is Troy Aikman. I think everybody knows that. You know, Troy had a dip on the West Coast, but that's okay. He's a Sooner.
And, the best thing ever happened to him was getting injured. Jerome Brown breaking his ankle.
But
he was he did win that year. Won a national championship, and I always ask him, say, hey, do you still have your national championship ring? You know you're a national championship.
Yeah.
You won a national championship and 3 Super Bowls MVP, don't you? And he's just kind of laughs it off. But, yeah, you're right. Yeah, his whole ties.
Right. So your Oklahoma guy, your guy's Troy Aikman. I mean, is because of the way football is played, because of the way that position works, I mean, you know, when you speak about Troy, there's an insane respect. And, you know, I know and everybody knows that you respect Troy. But, I mean, does that really, you know, get you – I don't know any other word to say other than hyped. I mean, just that your guy, your quarterback, your leader, your dude is out there on Sunday. And Dak Prescott, he's saying, I want this. You know, he's not backing down. He's not saying, I want to rest. He's not saying anything. He's taking sacks. He's out there playing like this game means the whole – you know, thing is on the line. I mean,
That's why I respect him a lot, because of just that, you mentioned. And I think a quarterback has got to wear that type of a hat. And they wear so many different hats and the leadership that you develop and you show your teammates. And look, dude, guys, hey, I'm in it with you. We're in that foxhole together. And I'm going to be out there and I'm going to try to win. I'm going to try to get better. And, you know, Dak Prescott's a young guy, but it's the same thing, the leadership capability and leadership things they do. You display that when you're on stage, and that stage is trying to win a game for your team. And I that's one thing I do like about it. He's got this competitive edge to him. Guys respect him. And I think the most important thing that Troy didn't really exude, Dak gets excited about everything. He's very emotional, and I like that. But I think it's all the locker room and everything that you don't see, the preparation. We talked about the preparation this kid has gone through since day one. I mean, staying later on and when everyone's home watching film, you know, trying to embrace and soak in all the information that you have to have as a quarterback. To me, that speaks a lot of volumes. And so maybe when Darren Woodson or Woody talks about the players and everyone, the administration and people within the organization respect Dak Prescott, because maybe those are the intangible things he does that maybe Tony Romo didn't do, that he didn't show that leadership skill. Guys watching him and like taking note and, hey, look, that's my guy. He's going to lead us to the promised land.
Well, and that's what, you know, when we talked about it last week, I said, you know, Maybe Dak is a lesser player than Romo, but if they believe in him more, that's a different thing.
You know exactly. I mean? Right. That can be a little misconstrued sometimes, the way it's in text and the way it's said. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said about that.
Sure, that was the point, you know, that I took Woody as making. He never said Dak is better. He just said they believe in Dak more, and that can be true. I mean, it's as absurd as it may sound, it does seem that, you know, it's important to note, I think, that the Cowboys and the players, they love Jason Garrett. I mean, love. They truly love him. They care for him. They fight for him. And they do the same for Dak Prescott. And I just, you know, last week when I was filling in at ESPN San Antonio, we had Jason Garrett on. And he talks all the time, every time they've won the division, about how, you know, wear your cap for this day and then give it to somebody you love. And
yep.
I got to imagine this is a really, you know, emotional time for Jason Garrett. It's been his first holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, now New Year's. And, you know, the season that the Cowboys have had without his father, who passed away, obviously. And so, I mean, he's a guy who's extremely emotional and who, you know, everyone sees the clapping and whatever. But, I mean, you know better than anybody that he's a guy who people love and care for. And I think that Dak Prescott is an extension of that personality.
Well, I think sometimes we, you know, the media and just our whole perception of you know, football players or professional athletes and coaches that, you know, there's not this inner self emotion. They don't go through the things that normal people go through. Well, that's, you know, you couldn't be farther. I mean, you couldn't be more wrong than it's, you know, one thing that Jason Garrett does is that, you know, he really obviously cares for his players and he's very passionate. And there's two, you see two different Jason Garrett. You see the one that presents himself in front of the media and then the one behind the curtain. As a player, I care more about the guy behind the curtain because I know what, you know, what he's like, and you know, whatever he does to prepare his players, the passion and the speeches, everything that goes along with being a great coach. And yeah, without a doubt, you got to give him a lot of props, and you got to give him a lot of credit for turning this thing around. Yeah, he takes players, but it takes a special kind of leader. I don't know how many times we've seen this in the National Football League. You go 3-5, and the coach, you hear it all the time. Well, the coach lost the team. You know, they're doing everything. They don't care about winning, and they're undisciplined, and the coach has lost the team. Mm-hmm. Jason Garrett, he could have easily lost this team.
But he didn't.
As you mentioned, you know, players love him, but players believe in him, and he went out and got Amari Cooper.
You know, he really did.
Whoever went out and got Jerry, we'll give Jerry the GM of the year or whatever, whoever wants to take credit for that. But at least they went out and made changes.
A lot of things there that I think are really important. You know, the Cowboys were 3-5. They finished 10-6. They went 7-1 in the second half of the season. And the lone loss was to the Indianapolis Colts, who won 9 of their last 10 games.
They're pretty damn good right now.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, if you told me, you know, we got to lose one game along this stretch of 8 games, which one do you want it to be? I would have said the Colts. I mean, you know, you would have wanted it to have been the AFC team, but also because they're so good. And I think it's fair to note that the Cowboys were kind of, they did take their foot off the gas a little bit, which is probably why the win in New York means so much to them. You know, Amari Cooper's been fantastic. By the way, some things happened while you and I are recording this.
Right.
First, Amari Cooper, you know, if you're listening to this, you might not remember this. This has nothing to do with Amari Cooper, but when the Cowboys have gone to the playoffs, the fantastic team at DallasCowboys.com, they've put together hype videos, you know, and they center around one player. You know, they did a Dak Prescott one and a Sean Lee one.
Oh, they do a tremendous job of that.
They're so good at that. Derek Eagleton's team are fantastic. And they just released an Amari Cooper one, which is probably going to be fantastic. I haven't seen it yet, but go watch that at DallasCowboys.com. The second thing, Tony, we're cruising along. We're on this road trip that we're on this episode of the 750 is fantastic. We need to pull over to Bucky's and gas up right now because I have to tell you some news while we were recording. And this is how real, you know, it is. There's no curtain on the 750. You see all of everything
not.
We do.
Very transparent.
Exactly. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported that the New York Jets, who did fire Todd Bowles after their season concluded, they have requested an interview with Chris Richard to be their head coach. So Chris Richard, Cowboys secondary coach, sort of pseudo defensive coordinator, will be a big time focal point on Saturday night against the Seahawks for the second matchup between these two teams. His former squad, obviously.
This is going to be interesting because I don't know. This is what I'm thinking. Right when you mentioned that, I thought about when Wade Phillips was the head coach here, and
that's when Jason Garrett.
Atlanta and Miami
and Baltimore. Atlanta and Baltimore.
Atlanta and Baltimore as a head coach did those interviews. Well, Jerry, he upped the ante.
Yep.
And then playing one of the highest offensive coordinators in the National Football League, I believe he's making $3 million, kind of like, you know, grooming him for the next head coach. I don't know how much he really – I think Chris Richard is going to be a tremendous coach. I mean, I mean he's one of the reasons why this defense is, I think, you know, taking another step and developing in that secondary is because of him. But I would think that Rod Marinelli, I mean, he's done a tremendous job, had a long career. I would think this will be his last job. He's not – well, they're co-play callers. But what will Jerry do – being threatened by another team wanting to interview him, will he up the ante and like, look, you know, Chris, we love you here, and what's it going to take for you to remain the defensive coordinator? I mean, they've done that in New England. Look at that whole crazy deal with Josh McDaniels, took the head coaching job at Indiana and then kind of reneged on it and ended up, you know, hiring the bearded guy, Patricia there. So it'll be interesting to see what Jerry's take will be on this. I think this is going to be an interesting story.
Well, you know, I don't think I have to remind anybody that, you know, head coaching interviews don't grow on trees. You know what I mean? So if you're if you're a guy in the NFL that wants to be a head coach, I mean, it's
you got eight openings right now.
It's pretty, and you know, I mean, you look at the Jets, and you know, the Jets are the Jets, but I mean, they have a young, promising franchise quarterback in Sam Darnold, and on the subject of the secondary, they have Jamal Adams, one of the best up and coming safeties in the NFL. You know, Chris Richard gets his hand on them. You know, in New York, I mean, I just got to imagine that that would be great. It is worth noting, by the way, Tony, that if Chris Richard were to become the head coach of the New York Jets, that the Cowboys do visit the Jets in 2019. So they would be squaring off right away. If this, I mean, the guy would have to interview and then, you know, get the job and whatever. I mean, a lot of things would have to happen, a lot of dominoes. That is... but you know what?
His stock has risen since he's been in Dallas. I think just what he's done. And I think that he's, I mean, watch him. And again, you, the leadership, either you have it or not, whether you can communicate. To me, it just seems to me when I just, and I never met my observation of him on the sidelines and what I've heard players. I mean, those dudes like balling for him. And there's a lot to be said. Nothing to take any respect that they're not balling for Rod Marinelli. But I mean, it's a young man's game, and Rod Marinelli is, you know, he's in his latter years of coaching, and but you just see this young Bo type of coach that has a lot of charisma.
I think
it'll be interesting to see if Jerry says, "Look, hey, Chris, yeah, we don't want hey, you. Hey. What's it going to take you to, you know, for you to stay the Cowboys?
Hey,
and maybe
Chris.
In these days you may be the head coach for the Cowboys."
Hey, Chris, there ain't no oil money in New York, you know. They named that city twice. There's only one Dallas, Texas. But, you know, I mean, I think this is a testament, though. If you come to Dallas, things happen. You know, if you join the Cowboys and you have some success, people pay attention. I mean, you know, Matt Eberflus, your friend, got an opportunity to go be the defensive coordinator of the Indianapolis Colts. He's been kicking ass. You know, he might be saying, dude, if I'd stayed in Dallas one more year, maybe I'd be in line to be the head coach of the Jets. But I don't think
you had the opportunity to be the defensive coordinator.
Right. Flus's time will come. But yeah.
That's a great point.
I want to ask you if, you know, as somebody who's had a variety of coaches, I would believe, and I think people would believe, maybe people want to know, is I think it might be cool to have a personality like Rod Marinelli and Chris Richard in the same room, so to speak, because Rod's at this point kind of the elder, you know, quiet guy that still curses like a sailor. And, you know, he wears, you know, tweed jackets. I mean, he's an
old school dude.
Exactly.
Kind of like me.
And Chris Richard comes in and he's guns blazing, puts on cleats and he's in your face and he's cussing out players.
He's a young dude, man. He's got that energy and that passion.
So that's got to be a great yin and yang. You know, I think you need both. And the Cowboys have a perfect marriage right now that obviously won't continue because there's no way this exact coaching staff will be in place next season, especially with people interested in Richard. But I think that has been one of the most impressive moves that the Cowboys made over the offseason was going and getting Chris Richard and pairing him with Rod Marinelli.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, you know, it's been a way in which he could kind of not groom him, but I mean, he's already had experience when he was in Seattle. But yeah, I think that it's kind of given him an opportunity to grow as a play caller. And I think the biggest thing when coaches and are being evaluated and general managers or owners are interviewing coaches is that they look at those type of things, the intangible things. And we mentioned earlier, you know, do you have the it factor? Do guys respond to you, whatever your message is? Do you, you know, what are you getting out of them? And I think the biggest thing you can look back in the comparison between 2018 and 2017. I mean, this defense has gotten much, much better in 1 year. And I don't know how much credit we want to give to Chris Richard or the players, but I think it's been a perfect marriage with both him and Rod, as you just mentioned.
A little bit more transparency on the 750. As we were talking there, Ian Rappaport of NFL Network also reporting that Matt Eberflus is getting looks to be a head coach in the
NFL.
Well,
I think so. I think, you know, he's a great dude. You know, he's a personal friend of mine, and I just know the guys that work with him, and look at the success he has. That's what you need. That's the thing you have to have in the National Football League. You need 1 year. You need to be in a defensive coordinator or, you know, coordinator job and have success. And a lot of people, and you got eight jobs out there. I mean, there's a lot of jobs vacancy right now. So then there's a lot of really good coaches out there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I'm kind of ambivalent about this. I kind of like it and I don't like it because I don't like to see dudes get canned. But, you know, that's the reality of the business in the NFL.
Well, and I think, you know, it's a circle of life. You know, yep. That is life. Yeah, you know guys that lose jobs. But you mentioned your good friends, Matt Eberflus. You know, his time's coming. I feel for, you know, his family. They just packed. And moving sucks. I just moved. They just moved to Indianapolis a year ago. And now they might have to move again. I mean, you know, it's a lot easier when you're making that head coach scratch. But, you know.
Yeah, that's part of the business, the job security. I mean, that's good job security if you can increase your salary and have a head coaching job. Let me ask you this real quick, you know, on the subject of coaches. How about Mike Zimmer at Minnesota? Well, the way that's kind of imploded and the whole deal with Kirk Cousins, we saw him and his wide receiver getting into John Match. There's a lot of frustration. But, you know, Zim, what is this, his fourth, fifth year there?
Yeah, I mean, let me be
– I think his job is safe, but, you know, that whole project, you know, didn't work, and they're supposed to be better on offense, and they got beat by the Bears yesterday, and really it just seems to me they just hadn't – you know, they've regressed since last year. Sure. Maybe it was that New Orleans game. Maybe they just kind of, you know, I don't know.
You know, first of all, I think that there are coaches.
Not the New Orleans game. Maybe that was just the
last. Right, last hurrah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there are coaches that get passes, if I would call it that, in the NFL in two ways. One, if you're cool. You know, Bruce Arians is a great example. If he wears the Kangol hat and he curses and he takes all the reporters aside, talks about whiskey. You get a little bit of a pass because everyone's less likely to be mean to you if you're cool. And the other is if you're really nice. You know, Mike Zimmer is a sweetheart. You know what I mean? And so nobody wants to say anything bad about him. Who wants to say anything? It's a lot easier to dunk on guys like, you know, Vance Joseph and Hugh Jackson than it is to dunk on Mike Zimmer. But I agree with you.
I understand that. But still, it's a judgmental business.
Sure. From
and again, going back to, you know, how they beat New Orleans and – and then the way that they played this year, and you go out and spend a ton of money on a quarterback, and you know that, you know, it started off okay, but now it's just gotten where frustration has settled in there.
Well,
I just think the whole evaluation of coaching, and I just brought that up because I know Mike Zimmer, he's a defensive coordinator in Dallas, and I was glad to see him. He was with Cincinnati for so long, as a coordinator, and finally got his job, you know, his opportunity and the job in Minnesota, but. You know, that's another guy on the sideline. You watch him, you think, God, that dude's going to explode.
We talked about the Cowboys fighting for Jason Garrett. There are definitely coaches like that in the NFL. It doesn't seem like the Vikings fight for Zimmer. You know what I mean?
Right.
They have a different DNA about them. And I really like Kirk Cousins. He's a Spurs fan, first of all, so good for Kirk. But he's a, you know, he's a great guy.
Shit, I don't feel sorry for him.
Well, I don't feel sorry.
$100 million.
He's a cool dude. So he does a weekly podcast. I think that's really cool that he takes fans behind the curtain, things like that. But yeah, I mean, you know, Kirk's really failed. I mean, you know, you come to Minnesota, they pay you all that money, they pay all that cheese. They expect something special. And yeah, they ran into the Bears, and that should be, you know, understood. But the Vikings had their chances, and they squandered them. I mean, and you know, Zimmer has had his moments, you know, when they lost Teddy Bridgewater and Adrian Peterson. I mean, they fought back. And I mean, what he did against the New Orleans Saints last season, as you mentioned, was incredible. But I think maybe they've lost a little of that. You know, they need some Mike's secret stuff in Space Jam. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly. That's going back to what you mentioned earlier, but the Oklahoma-Alabama, that's what the Oklahoma Sooners needed in their playoff games. They need a little Space Jam, some aliens to come down and invade their body.
Yeah,
like the legends of the past, you know. But I don't know. In the coaching carousel, it happens every year. As you mentioned, it's life. It's a football life. But it just goes to show, you know. And then, you know, I think the best hire I like is Mike Mayock with they used to be the, you know, with the NFL Network. The Raiders hired him as a general manager. So that'll be interesting to see what they do with that. And see if him and obviously him and John Gruden will be able to coexist, but there'll be a lot of changes going on, and that's what keeps us busy.
It's really interesting to see, you know, the Raiders went and got the most colorful color commentator to be their head coach. went and got the most renowned draft analyst to be their general manager. It's like all their analysis was just watching television. You know what I mean?
Let's see if he can do all that analyst work. Let's see him put it in place and see if he can put together a winning franchise.
We'll be back later this week to talk extensively about the Cowboys wild card matchup against the Seattle Seahawks. But before we get out of here, some quick thoughts. We talked about how we think the Cowboys have a 51%+ chance against Seattle, and so we think they're probably favorites. Most books have them as 2.5 to 3 point favorites. I mean, home teams are generally 3 point favorites as is, so you could argue that it's really nothing. But I think coming off the game they're coming off of, it's hard for me to pick against the Cowboys at home. I know you're so big on home field advantage. I know the Seahawks beat them earlier in the season, but there was no Amari Cooper. There was no Wolf Hunter. There was an Earl Thomas for the Seahawks. Things are a lot different. I think the Cowboys are going to get this win. I think it would be poetic for the first playoff win in the Dak and Zeke era to be against the team that they debuted against up in the preseason 2 years ago.
It seems so long ago when we're talking about Earl Thomas. I remember writing a blog about why the Cowboys need to bring Earl Thomas in here. And obviously the rest is history. Seattle's a much better team. Cowboys are a much better team, as you just mentioned. Amari Cooper, Leighton Vander Esch, a lot of things have happened, transpired since then. But, you know, Seattle's is a better team. They have Doug Baldwin back. Russell Wilson is playing back to his old form. Defensively, they're playing well, top to bottom. So I think that's, you know, both teams are peaking. And I think what that means is going to be a hell of a matchup. But I think, again, it's going to come down to the quarterback making big plays. Defensively, yeah, we know the defense is going to be a huge part in this game. And, you know, shut down Russell Wilson and some of the playmakers he has. But, you know, I like the Cowboys' chances at home. I think that this is a very legitimate game that they can win at home. And especially the way they're playing. And again, I think what they're coming off and, you know, the way that they won in New York, people are like, hey, you know, what does that mean? Well, it means a lot. And I think that's probably why I'll end up, I'll probably pick the Cowboys to win. Not sure yet, but I'm kind of leaning that way.
This will be a big talking point, I think, all week long, at least in our world, maybe within the Cowboys world, who knows? I wrote about this already. It should be coming out later this week at BTB. Last time the Cowboys and Seahawks played, in the following week, Doug Baldwin, who you mentioned, came out and said that they had two of their younger players with the assignment of watching, dissecting, and deciphering the Cowboys' hand signals on defense. And Doug Baldwin said that they were successful, that helped on the Tyler Lockett touchdown that they had late in the first half of that game. My first question is, how often does this happen? Because I have to believe the answer is a lot. And my second question is it really a big deal, or is it only a big deal because we heard about it? This does happen all the time.
Yes and yes. And it is a huge deal.
Have you ever – it's a huge deal, or everyone does it?
Well, I think everyone tries to do it. Some are better than others. But I think the thing that you have to do is you got to change. It's like a pitcher, a catcher giving signals to a, you know, to a pitcher. I mean, they're trying to hide their signals. And the same thing the way – you know, you can get a little bit creative with those signals, but yeah, I mean, there's a guy that is signed and it's on TV. It's a video. I mean, you can sit there and video the guy on the sidelines and then don't think that people, you know, teams don't try to use that.
I'm not going
to, that'd be very naive to think that they don't.
I'm not going to implicate you at all. So you can answer this as carefully
statute
as you want.
Limitation.
Right. Exactly. But in a hypothetical world, let's call it at the high school level. Have you ever experienced something like this where that is an objective for a team? Not even a high school level, just, you know.
Some people do it better than others.
Okay.
And it's just the way you know, the whole metrics and just, you know, the way that you interpret the signals. And, you know, the bottom line is that you got so much film on each other, RJ,
right,
that you know the tendencies of the plays are going to run. But, you know, there's – you know, for the play calling for the offense, I mean, you look, you know, everything's, they have a, you know, a play call sheet on their arm and everything is being communicated through their, you know, through their helmet, you know, via the coordinator on the, whoever's making the calls on the sidelines. But I mean, everything that you try to do. Look, it's not cheating. Well, I guess it's a little bit, right?
Is it
cheating? It's out there. I mean, is it really cheating? Because it's you can see it. It's not like you're going back in the office and, you know, like maybe the Patriots have done in the past. And I'm not implicating them, but we all know that's, you know, that's public knowledge, okay?
I'm not.
So I think, you have to try to use every – you got to create any edge that you can.
That's
knowledge is very, very – it's very valuable. Knowledge is very valuable.
Yeah, I don't think it's cheating. I think if you are within the boundaries of the rules, you know, maybe you're an inch away from the boundary. But if you are within the boundaries, you're within the boundaries. You know what I mean? So it's
hard. Let's put it this way. They're not going to make it a public – admit it publicly that they're doing it.
That's my last question. Is Doug Baldwin coming out and saying what he did back in the end of September, is that sort of something that's like, dude, come on, we don't say it out loud that we do this. Is that kind of like an unwritten rule?
Maybe that's a message to send the Cowboys. Like, hey, you know, maybe we need to change up. Maybe we think about that. Maybe we need to change up our, you know, our play calling, dude, and the way we do things.
You went deep.
Think about that.
So when we pulled over at Bucky's, I got like the beaver nuggets. You got like the like a monster, and you took your brain to another level. That was great.
I love those honey. What are those? The honey roasted nuts, man. I'll tell you what, they got the beet jerky. I got it all.
I got some kolaches.
Hot dogs, Cheetos, and all that great junk food. All the stuff I'm giving up for my New Year's resolution.
Hey, but you got a few hours left if you want to squeeze them in 2018, and then, you know, get real in 2019. So. Yeah.
There's a lot going to be had in the next, what, how many hours we have?
We got
10
like,
hours?
We got like 11 hours. You got
11, about 12, yeah, 11 hours, 12 hours, yeah.
Okay. So
it's that, on right now.
That does it for this episode.
Ready,
of 75.
Mark, set, go.
the Cowboys are 10-6. We'll be back later in this week to get ready for, Tony, the playoffs. We're playing playoff football on Saturday night. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm pretty hyped.
Sounds good. Hey, Happy New Year to you again, and Happy New Year to all our listeners out there. Hope you guys have a prosperous New Year.
A very Happy New Year to you, Tony, and to everyone out there. Thanks for joining the 750 in 2018. This was the year we were born, and we appreciate all of you. We're looking forward to many bigger and better things. It's going to be a lot of fun in 2019 and beyond. Tony, let's hope that we have a great week. I think we will.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice beginning to the new year.
Let's do it. Thanks, everybody. Have a very happy and safe new year. We will see you later this week. This was the 750.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.